This is the last Sunday of the church year, and that means, to quote Lewis Carroll's narrative poem, The Walrus and the Carpenter, the time has come to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax, of cabbages and kings. I'll talk about sealing wax and cabbages on another Sunday, preferably during Lent. It is, after all, the penitential season. Today, I have a word or two to say about kings, and one king in particular, Jesus Christ, the universal king, whose reign we celebrate today. Now, Christ the King is one of those rare liturgical feast days that Catholics share in common with other churches, the Episcopal, Anglican, Lutheran, Methodist, United Church of Christ, the Presbyterian, the Moravian churches are all observing Christ's kingship today. The exception in this list is the Church of Sweden, whose liturgical calendar calls this the Sunday of Doom. To appreciate that, you probably have to live in Stockholm, where the nights at this time of the year are 18 and a half hours long. In many of these churches today, homilists will probably begin by pointing out that Americans are traditionally suspicious of monarchy. We may watch a royal wedding or the celebration of Queen Elizabeth's Diamond Jubilee, 60 years on the British throne, but no one on this side of the Atlantic will be asking Her Majesty to lend us Prince Harry to sit on an American throne. Why would we need a monarch in a country where everyone is king or queen of his own castle? Well, at least until the local municipality expropriates your castle for a new Walmart. We seem to feel, almost intuitively, that modern democracy is diametrically opposed to the claims of kings. Britain and northern European countries, Belgium, Luxembourg, Holland, Denmark, Sweden, and Norway, have all kept their royal families, but while their monarchs reign, they do not rule. We are celebrating the feast of Christ the King, not Christ the chief executive officer, or Christ the galactic chairperson, or Christ the commander-in-chief of the universe. Given our distrust of royalty, this feast may seem slightly out of step in a nation that has been a democratic republic for the last 228 years. And this dulls us, I think, to the political implications of this feast. And make no mistake, there are political implications to the feast of Christ the King. Even if we are unaware of them, then surely others have not been quite so naive. And if we are largely unaware or even skittish about the political overtones of claiming Christ as our sovereign, the martyrs of the church were not. In the year 150, the aged Bishop of Smyrna, St. Polycarp, was invited by the Roman magistrate to save his life by taking an oath of loyalty to the emperor. Polycarp refused, saying, "How can I blaspheme my king who saved me?" He was, at that moment, claiming loyalty to a rival monarch, a king to whom is due an allegiance that left no room for the Roman emperor Antoninus Pius. And it was no accident when 1,700 years later, during the anti-clerical persecutions in Mexico in 1927, where hundreds of priests and lay people were shot or hung, Father Miguel Pro's final words before being shot by firing squad were, "Vive el Cristo Rey." He was proclaiming his loyalty to the same king whose rule transcended all political, ethnic, and national boundaries. To claim Jesus Christ as our King is to put on notice any political system that attempts to claim sovereign political power for itself. This is why tyrants, despots, and dictators, from the Caesars to the commissars, have all equally persecuted the Church. Ideologues do not tolerate divided loyalties. This is the reason behind Pilate's careful questioning of Jesus and the gospel today. Are you then a king? In Pilate's frame of mind, king of the Jews had merely political meaning, which could make Jesus a dangerous figure. A rival king in a Roman province would constitute an offense against the emperor and the Roman people. But as the Gospel of John clearly reveals, on Jesus' lips, the title King of the Jews acquires a new and deeper significance. In John 18:36, Jesus tries to clear up Pilate's misunderstanding by stating that my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here. This means that Christ is not king like the rulers of the earth. His kingship does not depend upon the powers of this world and is not inspired by them. In fact, the relationship is the opposite. All authority, whether in heaven or on earth, comes from, is inspired by, and depends on God. In the end, Christ's true kingship is only fully acknowledged when he is crucified. And this is why Pilate uses the title and the rites of coronation to mock him. The liturgy of his death is a parody of an imperial court liturgy. He's dressed in purple robes. He wears a crown of thorns, not of gold, of course. Is given a reed as a mock scepter, is presented to the crowd by Pilate with the words, "Behold your king," and finally, he is enthroned on the cross. Whatever nationality is emblazoned on our passports, Christians are resident aliens on this planet. We may be citizens of the U.S., Canada, England, or any other nation, but our true and only sovereign Lord is Jesus Christ, and that is why we pray at every Eucharist, "Thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven."